Yeah. Okay, this is side four.
Now we're going to pick up with Holbrook and Taker, okay? They're both fine, interesting people, good laboratory directors. They had a fine attitude towards the work. They told me they wanted, after I'd had the sort of experience I had in central research, they thought it'd be a good idea if they just dumped me into some practical problem in a dye field, not of my choice, and I didn't object. And I ended up with Mel Perkins, fine man in the anthraquinone dye field, on a behavior problem dealing with the behavior of that dye dispersions before they were padded onto fabrics. And out of this, I had to learn quite a bit about colloid chemistry, which was damn good for me. I found that attitude toward research at Jackson Lab was freer than it had been in central research. I was less directed. And nobody cared what I did as long as I did some work on that project they assigned and came up with some kind of an answer, which I did, and I found I was spending, that was an easy project, and I was spending more of my time just synthesizing molecules and having fun than I was working on the project. And first thing I knew, I made a rather interesting discovery of a new synthesis of polynuclear compounds, and nifty synthesis. I was able to put together in one fell swoop a molecule that had one ring here and one that had two rings here and make one that had five rings. And this was generally applicable. Net result of this was I got promoted and I was running a group on exploratory vat dye chemistry.
So you were listed as a research chemist only for a year there.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Could you consider continuous synthesis when you became a supervisor?
Yeah, yeah. I was in a laboratory and had a group of about six people, and I was encouraged to do work to the extent that I wanted to. And this was great because I had these fellows doing work, some of which was stuff we had to do and some of which was ideas we could cook up. I had a chance to cook up ideas and get people interested. And also I could do work myself on something that was compatible. I had a lot of fun in this period. This is when, as I said, I taught myself microchemistry to make things move faster. And you know, you can get the answer on a small scale and decide whether it's worth pursuing. Marvelous.
What was the general strategy, empirical synthesis of testing immediately? Or
The general strategy really was on a higher level than that. The vat dyes were a highly elaborated science which had been built up by exploratory work, some of which just the rational pursuit of what was good. You know, a knowledge of the basic principles that governed fastness in colored molecules, which had been fairly well elucidated empirically and supported theoretically. So you were doing work in areas that you knew had a chance of being fairly fruitful, and you knew pretty much what the color was you were going to get. And out of this, I did get some good patents, good colors. One was straight empirical work, where we replaced benzene rings in certain selected vat dye structures with thiophene rings. and made some, we made the surprising discovery that these things had better fastness to light, constructed out of thiophene. And of course you know about what the color will be because you know about the amount of shift you get from plugging in a thiophene ring, whether it's this way or this way. And the other was a synthesis for the first time of a series of light fast yellow vat dye stuffs of good properties, which turned out to be very profitable. And this again was not fancy chemistry. I knew exactly what I was doing. The Germans had made some colors that had rather surprisingly good fastness, but relatively low. Surprisingly good light fastness, but relatively low tinctorial strength and not too good wash fastness, using a molecule azo biphenyl, an azo group, two biphenyl groups on either end of it, and then the four position of carboxylic acid, 4-4 prime position, which was converted into an amide with anthraquinone. And I looked at that and said, that's kind of interesting, but they ought to make that a whole conjugated system. Let's put some oxazoles and thiazoles in there and make a great big long structure, and we hit pay dirt. The tinctorial strength went up by almost 10-fold, and the wash fastness was improved, and we had money. So we had a very rapid force-feed development of these colors, of which we put out 3 or 4. And the most fun in there was finding a good synthesis for that azobiphenyl dicarboxylic acid, which I did. I did that myself while the other fellows were making the colors. And that was fun. Then I got taken out of then. Right as that was about ready to go out to the plant, I got thrown into running another division, which was monastrol colors, thalocyanins, and a bunch of old fields, miscellaneous dyes, you know the odds and ends of dyes that didn't need much research, basic colors, sulfur colors, thioindigo, indigo. They just need somebody to keep an eye on them. So we were playing with monastrols, and that was very good for me because we had just built a new plant to manufacture copper thalocyanin and the various chlorinated copper thalocyanins, and the process put into the plant was not the same one we'd been using in our semi-works, and it wasn't working, and the stuff had really hit the fan. And the poor, lovely old German fella, gentle German fella, who was a good man, who'd been running the this division, really wasn't up to the hurly-burly of dealing with a management that was furious because the plant didn't work, and he wasn't responsible for that. It was the engineers that designed this thing. So they stuck me in there because they thought I was a little cantankerous and maybe could fight with these guys.
Who was this you replaced?
Otto Stahlmann. Stahlmann, marvelous man. Mm-hmm. Good friend, he became. Mm-hmm. Very helpful to me as I went into this job. But see, Otto could supply the knowledge that was needed about this field, and I could supply the fight.
Was this copper thalocyanine process running at the Chambers Works?
What had happened is they had been making the dye by the process of baking thalonitrile with copper chloride or whatever, which is a very easy process. It works beautifully and gives a very highly pure pigment. Some Linsted, basically it's a derivative from Linsted's and ICI's first work. To make it cheaper, they switched to the process where you take copper salt, urea, and phthalic anhydride and cook them up together in a solvent like trichlorobenzene. And there are many, many byproducts in this process. And you get not so pure a pigment, and it's difficult to purify it and get the shades you wanted. And the customers were screaming for the beautiful stuff we'd been making by the bake process from phthalonitrile. And we had this plant that was pouring out this not-so-good stuff by many, many pounds, great big plant. Mm-hmm. So we had to straighten that process out, find out what was wrong, handle the general management who were furious, and seeing money pour out the front drain, the front door. So I learned a lot about politics, dealing with plant, dealing with over-anxious people who want to do things when they don't know anything. And I had 2 years of marvelous experience in what you might call intertribal warfare. Good for me. Then I got to run the semi-works. So I was running a great big semi-works that made copper thalocyanin and chlorinated copper thalocyanin while the other one was in trouble. And we made a bunch of rubber chemicals and miscellaneous antioxidants and all kinds of stuff. And I was responsible for this on the side. It was good for me because it gave me a feel for a practical world.
Did you run into Mr. Wietrich, who was, I think he was plant manager over at Edgemore?
No,
later on.
I never ran into him.
I recall his telling me one time about Wietrich.
Yeah, I don't know him.
Came from Penn State, I think, or pretty sure it's Penn State.
Incidentally, there's something else I just ought to mention. Going back to Central Research, one of the great joys of working on that adhesive problem for the tire cords was the fact that I had complete responsibility for it. And when I found something, since it was such a hot project, I didn't pass the development on to somebody else. I just took the development. They gave me a plant. They sent, the first thing I made was a rubber derivative, and they sent me up to Fairfield, Connecticut, confronted with me with a Banbury mixer, and told me, go ahead, make it. And I had made it in a little Banbury mixer that held about 200 grams, and here I had this monster that held 1,000 pounds or whatever. And I had a bunch of experiences like this where I'd like make a dispersion, make this new latex, and make it in the laboratory in a little pressure gadget. And I had this great big autoclave and said, that's mine, go ahead and do it. Well, out of this you learn what it is that works in the laboratory and about which you really don't know enough to be able to do it on a big scale. You got to get data on the really the physical side of it. You know, rate data, heat data, mm-hmm. things like this. And it was marvelously educational. And that's what running this, having had that experience, then running this semi-works and the chambers works was damn good for me. Because I was learning what you needed to know to make things work.
I was going to raise some questions about the physical side of things, particularly in the biochemistry. You got involved in some later papers on dyeing rates on Orlon and Dacron and kinetics and mechanisms, that sort of thing.
Yeah, at the tail end of my 2 years running the miscellaneous dyes division, I was given responsibility for the dye. This is in 1950 now, in the 1950. I was given responsibility for running the project on the dyeing of the synthetic fibers, which were coming out, polyacrylonitrile, and then polyethylene terephthalate in addition to nylon. And I had an extraordinary opportunity here because I had a chance to, since these fibers were undiable or difficultly diable, I had a chance to go at a project the way I like to go about it, find out what's cooking before you dive in and synthesize the molecules. So we undertook a bunch of studies on the mechanisms of dyeing Orlon and Dacron by the various methods to find out, in the physical sense, what really was happening. What's going on as the dye goes into the fiber? What molecular features in the fiber are important? What molecular features in the dye are important? What is the physical process? And what are the equilibria processes, the rates and so forth? And when we unsnarled that and knew what kind of dyes we needed to have to do the right job, then it was a rather easy job to use the best of our knowledge on synthesis of dyes to get a hold of some very fine dyes. Good fun. I really enjoyed that project because it put together physical chemistry, synthetic chemistry, polymer chemistry.
Yeah. Okay, you had Matt Schuler. I think he's a picture of him is shown in a Chemical Engineering News article that you wrote.
Yeah.
On his...
The job with Remington. That was a classic job.
Remington was the physical chemist on this.
Yeah, Remington, Bill Remington was the he was the physical chemist and then the supervisor. We had him sort of as a group leader working with it, and Bill was a Chicago man. He worked with, I can't think of his name now, but one of the very physical organic men out of Chicago.
Wheeland?
Wheeland. That's it. Wheeland, yeah. I hadn't thought about him in 35 years. That's why he didn't come right out. Not Karaj, he was working with Wheeland. And Bill really was a marvelous chemist. Very prickly, difficult person. But one of the best chemists I saw in DuPont, and just marvelous for going into something and figuring out how to, what was going on. Had just the proper attitude, you know, suspicion, doubt. Anyway, Bill and Matt Schuler did that job, which was a classic.
Right. I guess the time I came, there was Sam Lord, I think, was working on the tri-stimulus color system or instrumentation. Or was that, did that come out of your work in any sense, or was this a new?
It came from outside, I would say. If you knew what was cooking in the general science of color, then it was just a natural thing to go after that and apply it. It was latent in the world outside of us, ready to be worked on.
Well, when you
we didn't do that. We worked. What we did well is this mechanistic work, the work that Remington and Gladding did on nylon, the work on the various mechanisms of dyeing Orlon that Blaker and I and others worked on, and the work that Schuler and Remington did on the solution dyeing of polyester fibers. Watch it. You all right?
See, I wanted to ask a little bit more about what the state of the theory of dyeing was at the time you got into the field.
You're talking about the physical...
Physical side.
Yeah. It was a state of much confusion. The understanding was there, but it, as in many things which haven't been done, brought to a conclusion. There were many, many theories. The only one that was really understood in principle and practical certainty was the fact that in the case of wool and silk, you were dyeing with acid or basic colors on the appropriate groups in the wool or silk. In the case of nylon, there was much confusion because the nylon was dyeable with all kinds of colors, largely due to the fact that besides its basic chemical effects, you know, end group effects, nylon is one very fine solvent with all those amide groups. And it has an extraordinary ability in its amorphous areas to dissolve things. The difference they know the real mechanism of dyeing a fiber by an approach which involved dissolving in the fiber was very poorly understood. The work done on cellulose acetate, which were dyes soluble in acetate, was pretty good but a little sloppy. The corresponding work on nylon was poor. And the corresponding work on Dacron was non-existent. There were all kinds of theories floating around to the effect that the dyes going into cellulose acetate or nylon or the like were going onto specific sites. Even if they seemed to be dissolving, they were going into specific sites. Remington's work showed, beyond any doubt, that basically what you had is the separation, a separatory funnel behavior. You know, just you had a partition coefficient; they would go in accordance with their solubilities in each medium. And Remington just completely destroyed all the fog that floated around this field. To illustrate how thick that fog was, I can take you to about 1955, I think it is, well after we'd done this work. I got invited down to a conference in Washington on the connection between molecular structure and biological specificity. It was run by the biological scientists. And it included all these real hot rocks. Later Nobel Prize winners, people like Linus Pauling, who were concerned with enzyme interactions with proteins and things like that. The reason I got invited down there is that we had done some relatively definitive work on the relationship of a polymer and another molecule, and they wanted me to talk about that. I got down there and delivered this paper, which was on all this mechanistic stuff. When I got to the part on the distribution coefficient, partition coefficient between a dye and polyester, Linus Pauling got up and wanted to start a fight. He said this was preposterous. There was obviously a site in the polyester. And he really gave a 10-minute lecture showing what an ass I was. Well, I had a whole bunch of slides with me. And I proceeded then to leave my talk, and I destroyed Pauling It was fun, fun. Real fun, because after I got through, Paulie was, you know what Linus is like, he's kind of, I won't say it. Anyway, when I got through delivering this rebuttal to Pauling, the people got up and cheered. You know, they really liked to see him put in his place. But the only reason I'm focusing on this incident is it shows you the miasma that was around this field. And there were too goddamn many mechanisms, no clarity. Okay?
Let's see. It's interesting that, well, of course, Pauling's field was more crystallography and that sort of thing anyway, wasn't it?
But he had gotten into this.
Yeah, no, well, of course.
Yeah. And, of course, Linus was into everything.
Yeah.
And I like Linus. There wasn't anything personal in this. It was just, and he knows me, you know.
Mm-hmm. He held it against you?
Yeah.
Later?
No, 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 no. As a matter of fact, he liked it. Yeah, after it was all over, and we were having a drink later on, he says, "That was good for me."
Thank you. Did you ever get in any arguments with Paul Floyd?
No, never, none serious. Paul was at Central Chemical Department when I joined there, and he left after about 2 months. When I'd been there about 2 months, I barely got to know him. He was right down the hall from me. I got to know him later when he was consulting with Fibers and Central Research, and we used to use him once in a while. And he was always very positive, but I'm so ignorant and poor in the areas that Paul is so good in that there wasn't any basis for a conflict. I used Paul pretty much as an encyclopedia, you know, for his mm-hmm. magnificent knowledge, and his very incisive reaction to things.
Oh, yes. And, he was, when he made up his mind on something, he was almost unchangeable, I think.
Yeah, he may have been wrong, but he was unchangeable. And I was never one to take him on.
Well, let's finish off on diachemistry,
okay, sure.
That sort of thing. I pictured Orchem as being the hotbed of diachemistry, maybe one of the best places in the world. During our period, is
it? It was good. The it wasn't the best. The Germans were probably the best. Not this mechanism stuff. We were the best.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question about that. I've had people who worked in England, like Peters, who wrote a lot of papers in this confused mess that deals with acetate and nylon, come up to me afterwards and say, "You fellas really clarified those mechanisms. Those were classic papers." On that stuff, we were undoubtedly the best, and I describe most of that credit to Brother Remington.
What about the marketing and business strategy of the dye works and of Orchem? Or is that enough of a lead?
Oh, abysmal. I love the marketing people. They were very good to me. They took me out in the field. They treated me in a way that the elastomers people never did. They took me out to the customers when I was a chemist, when I was a group leader, when I was a division head, and when I was assistant director of the lab. I got to go out to the customers, I got to go to their sales meetings in the different branch offices, and I really got a feel for the people and their problems, and I got enough knowledge so that I could separate the real problems from the hypothetical ones. you know, just the customers trumping things up. And they helped me greatly in this. These were people like, well, there was Bruce Chandler, and then Booney Newman, and then Gordon Markle. These were all college-trained people, but not scientists. And they're marvelous people. They the abysmal I would apply to their business practices. They had a feeling that you had to have all the dyes. You had to be able to satisfy any request. They had no concept of inventories and the expense of keeping all those things. And they saddled us with the need to make so many colors, so many of which were unprofitable, just because some small customer in the southeast corner of Pawtucket, Rhode Island, needed some to dye a spool of silk yarn, that they drove us nuts. Mm-hmm. This, of course, drove the plant crazy, too.
Yes.
And the plant had enough problems of its own. The Chambers Works was a very busy place in those days. Made zillions of things. They had some very good people, and also some very poor people. The residue of years of attrition and a process whereby the best people got promoted to other departments and higher jobs, and a lot of those who were not the best were left on the Chambers Works, and as being left didn't foster their individuality or talent. I mean, these guys had no incentive, and they weren't the best anyway. So the performance you got out of them was at best mediocre, and they required very tight supervision. Some of the practices that they engaged.